You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. My name is Noam Dorman. I'm the owner of the Comedy Cellar. I'm here as always, as almost always, with the fantastic Mr. Dan Natterman.
Hello.
Hello, Dan. How are
you?
How
do you do?
What's up with you?
What's up? Nothing out of the ordinary.
Okay. And we also have our associate producer.
Our
producer, Periel Ashenbrand. And I can't get used to saying that name. Doesn't sound right. Okay. And our guests, we have Jackie Fabulous, who is a comedian, a favorite of Estes, an actress, a writer, and public speaker. She was a semifinalist on this past season of America's Got Talent. Oh, like Dan.
I'm an alumni of America's Got
Talent. But Dan wasn't semifinalist. Dan was quarterfinalist.
I say I'm a semifinalist, however.
But you were...
For biography purposes, finalist.
The Laugh Factory calls me a finalist, and I'm like, I should correct them. No, you shouldn't.
No.
I don't want to mislead and get sued or something.
Well, people sometimes introduce me as, you know, a finalist, and I'm just always worried when I get on stage, I'm going to hear someone say, finalist! But usually people don't remember it, or if they even saw me, so.
Okay. Nobody cares.
Recently, somebody said he was the winner.
Oh.
Can I finish?
Yeah, you go ahead.
Kelly Bachman is a comedian from North Carolina, currently based in New York. She writes and produces a web series called Sofa Kingdom Sketch Variety Show. That's a good name. And just had her show, Rape Jokes by Survivors, at New York Comedy Festival.
Are you the one that did that video?
Yeah.
You're the one. Nice to meet you. And you're Noam. You're real.
I'm real.
Nice to meet you. I've seen you 1,000 times. Yeah. Didn't know you were important.
Kelly, we just discovered, is also a singer and guitarist, and I don't know if she's a songwriter as well.
I am.
Well, you got to come. We play on Friday and Saturday nights here. So we're playing tomorrow night.
Oh, awesome.
On Friday night, I mean. Come sit
if at the
in.
End of
really
the podcast you guys are still on good terms, I'm sure she will do so.
Yay.
Why such a foreboding thing?
What's going to happen?
No, nothing.
Isn't that right?
No,
Kelly, talk in your mic. I want to turn you up a little bit.
In the mic?
Okay. So let's get right to it. So Kelly was in the news on a... you don't mind talking about it, right?
Yeah, no. We got
so, you want to tell the story? Tell the story.
Sure. So basically... I was performing at a show in Lower East Side at a bar called Downtime in Alphabet City, and the producer of the show thought it would be a chill idea to invite Harvey Weinstein
to
watch me do comedy. And I said, "Rape is bad," and now I'm famous. So that's
there. You go. Do what you got to do to get there.
So you're skipping over, but you called him out from the stage. You said, "Am I the only one who's going to address the?"
Well, I was really calling out because it occurred to me. It became very apparent when I got in the room. I saw him in the corner of the room at a reserved table, and it was clear to me that the venue had invited him. That he was invited by the producers of the show, the Actors Hour, this organization that had booked me on the show. So I was really calling out them for inviting him. I was like, I think what I said was. I didn't know we had to bring our own mace and rape whistles to Actors Hour, calling out Actors Hour people for, like, putting me in this situation. And then they booed me and told me to shut up, and that's when I said the other stuff.
Now, on the video, who was booing?
Yeah, who booed you? Who booed you exactly?
We heard the booing
on the
video.
I don't know everyone who booed me. I know for sure that the host of the show booed me because that was, like, the person that I know. Like, that's the person I had who had introduced me, so I recognized them, but I don't know... I really am not familiar with this organization enough to know people in it. Like, I'm not a part of the organization. They would just ask me to do the show. So,
what's the name of the organization again?
It's called Actors Hour.
Actors Hour.
Ironically, their purpose is to create a safe space.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Actors.
So there's something about this story that just seems too impossible. It's like Jeffrey Epstein dying in prison. Like... Why would they invite Harvey Weinstein?
I got the sense, because there's a lot of young actors that I don't know.
I don't think he had that power anymore to give you a nice role.
Yeah, I got the sense that they had this, like, very naive, like, young, hopeful, like, idea that somehow he was either going to, like, secretly finance their project, or because people were kind of, they were going up to his table and, like, treating him like he was an industry guy. And like the host was kind of schmoozing with them, and people were, and
that's,
I asked,
amazing
there
to
was
me.
A woman sitting near me, like, if I could tell it was a part of the organization, and I was like, that's Harvey Weinstein, right? Like, I should say something. I'm a comic. Like, I should say something
yes.
on stage. And she was like, no. Like, and I was like
he doesn't want to be bothered. How,
like, oh my God,
attention.
No.
Just to,
and I was like, oh my God. Like, I just got the sense immediately that, like, a lot of the people in this room were not only okay with him being there, but, like, he was being treated like a celebrated norm, like how he would have been treated in the old days. Like,
I guess OJ probably still got treated like that. I
mean, I'd have lost my shit on stage. I'd have heard he was there, done my set, and I'd have been triggered. I'm triggered now.
No, I was triggered. Like, I was literally, when I realized that the two people who went up before me didn't say anything, like, and I was, because I kept being like, the next person will say something, like, they'll say something.
It's gonna happen.
They're gonna say, and then they didn't, and I was literally sitting on the side of the stage, like, in fetal position, like, typing into my notes things I could say, and I was like, will I say this? And I was, like, messaging someone, like, is this a test? Do I need to say something?
Yeah.
And then I posted a Facebook, like, what should I say? Someone say something funny, like, you know, it's like freaking out. And I was so triggered when someone said, shut up. That triggered me so hard that I kind of, like, felt like I wanted to say a lot more. And I felt sort of shut down, where I was just like,
you think it was one of his friends that said, shut up?
No, it seemed like he didn't want people, like, his table, maybe one of his friends, but, like, it was multiple people booing, and it was someone in the middle of the room that said shut up, not, like, his table was in the corner.
That is,
well, I heard, just to clarify something, somebody told me that this is a restaurant and a bar. It's a bar, and there was a show there. I had heard that he was there not to watch the show, but just to drink at the bar.
The show is a private show.
So that, yeah.
Like, it was a ticketed event where you had to be invited and reserve a table. Like, it was meant to feel like a... It's meant to feel like an exclusive, like, almost speakeasy type, like, environment where it's just, like, actors and professionals. And so it had that vibe where there's no way you're going to get a table unless you're invited by this. And actually, the person who invited me, because as soon as I saw he was there, the person who booked me on the show, I went up to them and was like, do you always invite the fucking boogeyman to your shows? Like, why is he here?
It's not like, and it wouldn't make it any better. He wasn't exonerated or a trial happening is over. He's still in the middle. He's out on bail.
Yeah.
Like, that's still, you're still in the heat of bullshit.
Yeah. Well, and they, and when I asked the person who booked me, I was like, did you reserve that table for him? And he was like, no, it was like the other producers. Like, they said they reserved a table for industry, and I didn't know he was going to be the industry. And he said that they had done it at their last event too. So he had been at two actors
He's the
events.
Rape industry.
He had been at two actors event, actors hour events in a row. So that's,
God,
not,
I wish I hadn't had so many drinks. Well, I got on.
So this, you know, and this,
I'm
is
so
a this is a tricky
now.
Conversation because I have a lot of, I wouldn't even say I'm conflicted. I don't like. Let me be very, very clear about this. I understand exactly how you feel. I feel the same way, honestly. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I don't like the, very wary of the way we're moving as a society where people are being called out all the time. And we had a little bitter experience here. I don't want to ask you what you think of. We had a little bitter experience here when Louis came back.
Right.
And staff members of mine who were on the subway were accosted on the subway by people yelling at them because they were wearing Comedy Cellar t-shirts.
Right.
And it was traumatic for them. And there were all kinds of stories. You know, and then, of course, like, someone was in the Trump administration or then, you know, you can just imagine all sorts of situations where somebody could come in, you know, wearing a Farrakhan t-shirt and there's somebody Jewish on the stage. I mean, and I think that I would even give up the right to call out a Nazi in the trying in trying to move society away from what seems to be more and more kind of freedom to do whatever you feel like when you feel that your personal threshold has been crossed in a professional environment like a show or a restaurant. Now, and before you answer, I don't want to put you on the spot because I'm not looking to argue with you. And I don't have a clear position about this, but I do feel like, you know, if it happened in my club, I mean, I would never invite him there, you know? Mm-hmm. But if he did walk in there, I would still expect the comedians to not do anything that would impact the show negatively. Because in the end, we're all there because mm-hmm. some people who worked hard and made a reservation a month in advance and saved for it went out to right. enjoy their evening.
Yeah.
And they are actually, it's their actual dollars that are coming to me and the comedians and everybody. And that has to come first. So I don't know what you think about that. And this may not be exactly comparable to your situation you were in.
I feel like as far as the situation I was in, which is what I can mostly speak to comfortably, is I feel like it's a conversation about safety of the performer. Like if I'm booked on a show and someone else is invited onto the show, either as a performer or as, in this case, you know, a celebrated like industry professional that I'm supposed to be performing for. If that person is someone who has a reputation for making artists feel unsafe, particularly women, you know, if I think it's the responsibility of the person producing the show, producing this private event, because it's not, we're not so much talking about like free speech. It's not like we're out in public in a situation where I am, you know, I'm not just walking in any bar. I'm, you know, being asked to come here as a professional. This is now like my workplace. This is like my office.
It's ridiculous.
And if you're, inviting someone who's has a reputation, who's, you know,
I mean, he's been accused
women accused of raping
like hundreds
50,
of people,
you know,
too.
Yeah,
this isn't
so
like some guy
it's
who's...
Like,
I think there's a
it's safety. It's like my safety. It's the safety of the other, you know, women in the room. And that's what I try to focus on more than, like, the free speech element.
I don't want to put words in your mouth. Until you said that, I would have thought it was the trauma of it and whatever triggered you said I take it from your title of your show, and I think I heard that you're a rape survivor as well.
Right.
So obviously this is very painful for you. You didn't think he's actually going to come up to stage and
I'm not afraid of being raped by Harvey Weinstein in that moment, but I'm like I'm emotional. I am unsafe as someone with PTSD. You know, like I'm unsafe. Mm-hmm. It's like if I think of another workplace, like if I work for like a corporation, if I work for like Olive Garden or something, and there's just like a known rapist on the staff or like a known someone who's physically assaulted people, everybody is whether we're really afraid that person's gonna do that to us in that space, the staff now feels unsafe.
Sometimes you just know that the presence of someone accused of or whatever is in the room with you, you know that it'll affect how you'll perform, speak to people. And sometimes an artist, when they're in a room with that kind of, with Harvey or anyone comes in the room, you kind of in a quick second, you kind of decide, okay, am I going to react because I'm at work, or am I going to say, forget it, I need to have a feeling and I'm going to express it? And you know that the result of it might be, well, you can't come back to that place of work.
Right.
Or, fuck it, I don't care. I had this feeling, I let it out. So sometimes it doesn't happen until you're actually in the room at the time, and then you're like, okay, do I say it out loud? And if I say it, you know you may not be invited back. So sometimes it's not until you're actually there within seconds and you decide, I'm going to make a comment now that may get me no longer working here.
Right.
You don't know, like, until it actually happens sometimes how you're going to feel.
I want to say one other thing before we get into any further, because I've been a performer most of my life as well. I've gone off on people in the audience for much less reason than you did, you know, and I've seen other people go off for other things that upset them. So in no way even if I do disagree or would have, if I would say, listen, I think that if you had to do over, you better just tell them, I'm out of here. I'm not performing in your dumb show. Whatever it is, in no way, I don't want you to think that I'm like saying, "Oh, yeah, boy, what a dumb thing she did." Like this is the most human, natural reaction.
Sometimes it's very natural.
Was the reaction that you had, honest from my heart. So whatever we have to say about it, you have to understand. I'm not, you know, I'm not talking about anything that, you know, we all do things and we look back and say, well. Maybe you do think it was 100%, maybe it wasn't, maybe someone disagreed with you.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely, I totally understand the reaction. I think 999 people out of 1,000 in your situation would have had the same reaction.
Yeah. So it's and not, can I ask, I know these situations aren't analogous, but just wondering if Harvey came in here to eat, he just walked in, sat down, what do you think the appropriate response of the management would be? And say you were another customer having a meal.
I mean that I don't want to prescribe I don't have the answer, especially for a public space. If something feels, I feel like I can speak to the event that night because it was a private event with invites and tickets, and this was a reservation made. As far as like everyone's responsibility to remove someone from a space, I don't want to put that on anyone. But
let me ask this question a different way. So if he did come in here, let's take a different person. Let's take him, like let's say it's Bill Clinton. And okay. I think that the case against Bill Clinton with Juanita Broderick and some of these cases is basically as strong as the case against Harvey Weinstein. It's very difficult to think that Bill Clinton hasn't done some really horrible things to women.
Well, are you now, asking if Clinton was at that same show?
Well, I'm saying if Bill Clinton came into the restaurant here, no one is going to expect me to say anything to this man, you know? And nor if Chris Brown came in. I mean, I could probably list, you know, 10 people who we all know have done basically the same thing. Who are not the villain of the day for some reason.
Right. Yeah.
And people would, they'd be afraid to say anything. And they wouldn't say, they look down their nose at saying anything. And this is kind of why I'm wary of the whole trend, because everybody just starts drawing their own personal lines. And before you know it, we descend into it. There was a thing on Twitter. Who sent it to me? Where some woman in Boston had a comedy show going, and she didn't like the humor that was going on the stage, and she pulled the mic on the show. Did you read about this?
Yeah,
and
I saw that.
And she tweeted, "I've never felt so alive." Do you remember that?
Yeah, I read that.
Because she shut down a comedy show because it was cis-centric or something, you know, something gender. They're making basically the jokes that all the comedians we know make all the time, right?
Yeah.
And so to me, it's just all part of the same trend. And I use this expression a lot, but in some way, the cure is just becoming worse than the disease. And again, I say that without wanting you to think. I really hope you don't seem like you're getting a bad vibe, but because I was worried. I wanted you to come in because we talked about it a little when you weren't here.
I mean, we've been talking about it quite a bit.
I said I shouldn't.
Not just you, but in general, since the Louis situation. No,
but her situation. Yeah. And I said, well, if I'm going to talk about it, I should face her if she's ready to come on. I don't want to just talk behind her back, especially, and also I don't know some of the facts.
But now we do, and I think it really changes
the situation.
Because we weren't sure, and I mean, I think there's like a lot of misinformation. Was he there for a show? Did he just wander in? But the fact that it was a ticketed event and the producers actually invited him is so fucking outrageous and irresponsible without giving the performers an option to bow out, right?
Absolutely. Let them
know ahead of time.
If something is a private showcase for industry.
It's insane.
And, you know, so like it's like a very specific situation. But to your question or what you're talking about with calling people out, a lot of people, you know, have been like overwhelming me with support and saying I'm brave and putting me on this pedestal of like, Kelly, come out and let's like clap for how brave you are. But I feel really lucky that I got Harvey Weinstein, because he's someone that has been kind of accepted as like predator patient zero. Like he's the pariah.
Yeah.
Like if you call the pariah, you didn't really do anything controversial on a global scale. if I had gotten one of these other gray area people that I'm not even going to say right now because I don't want to hear about it. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, if I had gotten one of those people and had been equally as triggered and equally as upset and equally as, you know, feeling unsafe, if I had said something and then it had gone viral, I would have had a 50-50 split of people, you know, coming after me saying that I'm like,
That's right.
Like PC feminist bitch, like calling out someone who didn't do anything wrong, and then I would have the other half on my side, and I don't want that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't saying anything that night hoping that it would go viral or hoping, you know, that it was like this thing. I was just speaking from my heart, and if it had been, you know, speaking from my trauma, speaking from the feeling of being triggered by someone saying shut up to me and, you know, someone putting me in the situation, and if it had been someone else, I might have done the same thing. I might have been more afraid and not have said anything. I would have felt the same way, and it would have had a totally different result. So I feel lucky that I got that guy.
What's remarkable to me is that Harvey apparently doesn't realize that he's Harvey. And you would think that if somebody invited him to a comedy show, he would have said, hey, I don't know if you read the papers or not.
I think he doesn't care.
I don't think it would be good for the show if I showed up. I mean, you know, apparently he thinks it's okay for him to...
But also the audacity that he doesn't think that somebody's going to call him out.
I think he doesn't care because someone that night told me that they, like, a man at the show who I don't know personally, so I, you know, if this isn't true, it's just like he told me he did this. But a man at the show told me that he approached him quietly and said, like, why are you here? Like, why are you coming to shows? Why are you out in public? Like, what are you doing? And he said, like, he doesn't mind. He was just, like, stone-faced. He said he was, like, I don't mind. You know, I don't mind if they talk about me. I don't care.
Yeah, like, people like that, they don't really feel like they're
he's
touchable.
Not,
unless, like, they're
unless
in another world.
Another, well, he feels that he's been unjustly accused and is saying, making a statement that how I'm not going to be kept from doing what I should be doing.
There's something
in
your mind.
I don't know what goes on in his head. And he did not respond to our request for an interview.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I think there is a kind of... I think what people forget a lot of times... Because I hear a lot from mainly, like, male friends of mine, this fear of, like, I don't want to get Me Too'd, like, which is... Like, Me Too'd is not over.
They overuse it incorrectly out of context.
Like, I don't want this to happen to me, like, if I was in that situation.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what you need to understand is that people who are serial rapists... don't have the same brain as you.
It's just like it's like they Cosby. If they like, can rape over and over again,
if someone has this power, someone has this brain that they want to manipulate people, they want to put that power over people, that's not the person that's like, oh, I feel bad. Like, oh, yeah. They're talking about me. Oh, no, now I can't, you know, this is a person that doesn't care.
Because they don't see themselves as a layperson. They're not like one of a regular, they're not regular in their mind. So they're like, I'll go wherever I want.
So
do whatever I want.
It's not the same reaction at all to like the person who feels bad after they do something like that. The person
who don't have the remorse
who
gene.
Has like this like I think there's a lot of like people with normal human brains are imagining that they could be in this scenario where they're gonna get accused of all these crimes, but really if you're getting accused of all these crimes, it's because you're the person who's doing all these crimes who doesn't care, you know.
Like, for example, if Harvey Weinstein, and this is just an example, if he doesn't think someone like, for example, Nicole Kidman could bring him down, he's not gonna think that you could bring him down.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be worried about going into a regular environment, a regular culture, a regular show. In his mind, we're all regular, and he's above everything. So he's not going to go anywhere and wonder and worry about being called out. They don't have that. Their mindset is all different. They're above everything. Him, Cosby, anyone who's committed a crime or an alleged misconduct, they don't walk into an area thinking, well, I'm going to have a hard time. They don't look at their mind is not wired that way.
He's been getting away with this for 40 years, too.
Yeah, and they've been doing it for their lifestyle is to deceive. So to walk into a room worried about whether or not they'll be called out, they don't have that way of thinking.
What happened after your set that evening?
I'm feeling a little tense. Anybody else?
Yeah.
I'm a comic. And it's our job to name the elephant in the room. Do we know what that is?
Yeah.
It's a Freddy Krueger in the room, if you will. I didn't know that we have to bring our own maze and rape whistles to Actors Hour. Shut up. Yeah. This kills at group therapy for rape survivors. They love it. Yeah.
Woo! Woo! Yeah, girl! Yeah!
surprisingly by no one in this room, but I've never gotten to confront those guys, so just a general fuck you to whoever I...
Yes, girl!
Well, after my set, a couple more acts happened. No, the host didn't say anything about it. The show kind of went on, and then another comic went up, and I don't know him personally. It's a comic from Florida I'd never seen in my life. But he got up and said, I also want to call out an elephant in the room. The producer who made Good Will Hunting, like, that shit's a good movie or something.
He's a dick. Whoever that
and
is.
I was just like, and as soon as he said he was from Florida, I was just like, where is the exit? Like, I was like, he's going to say something. And he did. He did say something for us.
And what about the idea that as a society we pretend that people are innocent until proven guilty? Does that give anybody qualms about all these people that are freed who were wrongly put in jail? There was this famous Nazi. Remember we talked about it last week. Ivan the Terrible was accused of being a Nazi war criminal. Turned out he was innocent.
Well, it turns out he was not the particular Nazi war criminal they thought that he was.
Yeah, I mean,
he may well have been a Nazi war criminal.
No matter what we may think, we don't really know until there's a trial. I know what I'm saying seems ridiculous in the context of Harvey Weinstein, but
and I'm a black person. That's a different podcast. I don't got that kind of time. People of color are always accused of and serve time. I want all this.
Well, that's right. So you have sympathy for what I'm saying.
That's a lot.
So
I'm too drunk to address that.
So again, that's another reason I think. Well, aren't we better off if we just embrace these fictions that have been very good for us for many years, and our worst moments have come when we didn't respect them.
Not until people are
innocent and proven guilty, and just, I don't know. I as I'm looking at you and you're here, and I understand what I'm saying and what you went through. I don't feel totally intense about my case, but it's hard to describe like best policies in the context of somebody who's. Has a particularly close attachment to it. But if we zoom out, I just think as a society, we would be way better off than we are today if we all just taught each other, you know what? Just let our institutions handle things. Let's just let things go. Mm-hmm. And because people are getting called out left and right. And like I said, it descends directly from, like, you're like the most vanilla case of, like, you can't even imagine a more justified case. Mm-hmm. But then that does filter down so that my waitresses are now being yelled at on the subways. It just becomes the kind of thing that you do, you know, and people start...
It's so diluted, but I know female comedians when I live in L.A. who've been raped by other fellow comics, and the comics are still working with them on shows. It's just, there's so many layers of this.
Well, to me, there's like a lot of people have been asking me about due process, like when I've been interviewed about this, and it just feels like a completely separate conversation. Like when someone talks about the due process of Harvey Weinstein or anybody, it to me is irrelevant from the conversation I'm having, which is about my safety and the safety of other women in the workplace. Of like, if you're on a show with another comic that you have heard has raped multiple other comics, and you then, whether you feel like that person might attack you after the show or not, you feel inherently unsafe, like, to just do your job, just be funny. Like, if you're everybody knows I'm a rape victim now, like, that's like a part of my identity that I now kind of have to speak to, and so now when I go into a room and I'm gonna do a set and there's somebody on the show that I've heard something about, and I do my jokes, and then he gets up and does a rape joke after me, and you know, and now it's like there's a feeling of, it adds a level of anxiety to me doing what I just came to do, which is just be funny, that I can't, it's hard to describe.
And as a woman, you're always uncomfortable.
Every
show, every city, country, state, big club, small club.
Why?
Because there's always a chance that there's something that you're triggered by in someone else's set. because we a lot of things happen to all of us. I haven't been raped, but I've had things happen to me that no one knows about. And I can hear a joke about, I can hear a Me Too joke, which I have, and get, and I'm livid at it. I'm like, that's not what Me Too is. But these guys are now throwing around Me Too like it's a funny phrase. I'm like, do you know what Me Too really means?
Yeah.
And that's every show, everywhere, all the time. That's in the comics table, and that's in the green room. And it's now it's a topic of funny conversation.
So
and it's not funny, but I have to laugh it off to do my set and move on with my life.
But so let me ask you this. But isn't there also something that, aren't we maybe stronger than what we pretend to be now as a species? For instance, and I don't, in shortly after World War II and the Holocaust, Hogan's Heroes was on the air just making fun of Nazis, right? Just like romping around with the Nazis. And
so technically, they were Luftwaffe.
Whatever. And
but I think that Burkhalter might have been SS.
Whatever. But we know what this was. And
Hofstadter.
And or the producers with Mel Brooks. And Jews found this funny. They were able to somehow in those days and say, yes, we just went through this horrible trauma, but yeah, I'm not reliving it if you're going to make jokes about it in some way.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that for some reason, we don't raise, I don't know what it is, but it's just not a norm anymore to have that kind of separation, compartmentalization. I don't know what you call it, but it is different.
I don't know how popular Hogan's Heroes was amongst actual survivors. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I think it's
like MASH made war funny, and it wasn't funny. So that's just Hollywood, you know, depicting a horrible time of history and making jokes out of it for our entertainment.
People make jokes about
it. Yeah, we laughed at it.
I mean, it depends what the punchline is. Like, for example, I produce this show, Rape Jokes by Survivors, as you mentioned. And this is a show where you have a lineup of all survivors of rape telling rape jokes. And the jokes are funny. Like, this show we just had, they all killed. I mean, these are funny jokes about rape. And they're
survivors,
you know? Yeah. And but it's different. Like, okay, what's been happening to me a lot lately is I get up and I'm speaking about this because that's what I feel like I can genuinely speak to on stage right now. Like, I need to talk about it because people look at me and they know this about me and I want to make jokes about it. So I'm making jokes about my experiences with rape and with this whole media storm. And what happens a lot is the comic after me, I remind them to tell their rape joke in which the victim is the punchline, which punches down on the victim, in which the victim is a liar, or in a joke in which they themselves are the rapist, or a joke in which the premise is, you can't rape me, I love sex. Like, they have that joke already. I don't think they wrote it for me, but my presence reminds them to tell that joke.
Do you think that a rape joke told by a man can ever be funny, in your opinion?
Yes. I think it's when the punchline should be the rapist, I think. Like, the punchline should be the culture or like the problem.
There's a serial rapist in Houston. There's nothing funny about serial rape, but what is noteworthy about this particular rapist is that all of his victims have been men. Enjoy your evening. I can't believe you clapped about that. It's a man raping men in Houston. That's the most gangster shit. So far, like 7 men have already come forward in the Houston area and reported this motherfucker, which means he must have raped thousands. That's a tough phone call for us to make. It's not like when you get raped, ladies. There's no... society don't give a fuck about male rape. There's no hotline for us. Man get raped, you just gotta get up and walk that shit off. Huh? Got raped. Caught me slipping. You gotta take that shit to the grave.
When the punchline is the victim, when the punchline is like, bitches are lying, or the punchline is like, rape isn't really rape, like, it's not, you know, like, and I'm so often hearing it's like minimizing the crime and minimizing the victim, and it's like getting a shock laugh. And I think that's why it keeps killing after I go up, because I'm doing like this vulnerable.
You're starting off. As,
I'm like doing this vulnerable thing about being a survivor, and it's like new, and it's like, and then to just be like, and I raped her, you know, it's like that's like a shock laugh.
It's the same rule for the N-word. You can talk about the N-word whatever race you are, but it has to be funny, and the joke better end with, I'm an idiot, and we shouldn't be using the N-word. You know, my race shouldn't be using it. So it's the same rule. You can talk about anything. It has to be funny, and the punchline has to be that we are idiots for using something we shouldn't be using. But you can't be a white guy throwing around the N-word in a joke, and then you're like, when I use the N-word with my black friend, it's all in jest. That's their name. But then it's only the title. It's not the actual topic. But if the topic is the N-word, it better end with a funny, 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 funny as hell punchline.
Oh, Dan has you one.
Can,
tell her.
You can discuss anything, but the punchline better be, this is kind of really not good, not bad. I shouldn't be using it.
I think theoretically you're correct with regard to the N-word.
But any I would never.
I did once or twice in the beginning of my career. One time at work, one time it met with thunderous silence.
That's the risk. You're a comic. That's great.
But I would never touch it anymore, even if I thought I had a good take on it that made fun of its use, not using it with hatred. I would avoid it because the word itself can have consequences that people don't oftentimes do not hear what you're saying. They just hear the word.
Well, now that you heard about this black security guard who got fired?
No.
He eventually got rehired. It was all over. I think it was in Time Magazine. Okay, there was a black security guard, maybe in a university setting or something, I don't remember, and another black dude was like, kind of harassing him and calling him the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, this black security guard got mad and said, don't call me, and he said the N-word.
Yeah.
And so, I don't...
That's just a waste of time. Come on, relax.
And the black security guard got... hold on. The black security guard got fired.
Ah. Which is, okay, it is a slur.
Could I just address the point you brought up a few minutes back about due process and that technically Harvey hasn't been proven guilty in a court of law. It's an interesting point, although, of course, we're not talking about a court of law. We're just talking about our own personal interactions. And you fired people without a full-blown trial. You've broken up with friends without a full-blown trial. In our own personal interactions, of course, we don't have a trial. So what appropriate standard of proof, if any, might there be to go after somebody in a public setting that you feel?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, there was no harm to done anybody that we care about here. You call that Harvey Weinstein. He fucking deserves it. We're pretty sure, as sure as we are of a lot of things, that he's a horrible sexual assaulter. And so it's hard to say that this is anything but a good outcome. Nevertheless, I mean, I'm just repeating myself. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. And the kind of muscles that we're forming, the reflexes that we're forming as a society, worry me because of people I know who've been called out, because of stories that I read, because of the kind of the way Twitter seems to show people eager to call people out. It's just kind of like for every person like Kelly, who's maybe very pure in the entire incident, there's someone else who's just like a hammer looking for a nail. Like, I'm this is awesome. I want to get called brave. She got called brave. We know these are, you know, human nature is not all very pretty. We know that people do all kinds of things that are motivated in ways. And I just feel like in the overall, we're not moving in a direction, I think, that we say, well, this is awesome. We're way better off as a society now when people are getting called out and, you know, attacked and mobbed. So
this is a way better podcast than the ones I've been asked to be on, where they're like, what's it like to be a woman in comedy? This is way deeper and better. Thank you so much for being somewhat cerebral. Every podcast.
Are you being sarcastic?
I swear to God. Every podcast I get asked to be a part. So what's it like to be a girl in comedy?
Well, but we don't care.
Exactly. That's why I love New York. Like, just do your job. We don't give a shit what gender you are.
Can I tell you both, just for the record?
By the way.
When we did bring Louis, we didn't bring him. When Louis came back and we decided to let him keep performing here, I personally sat down with every single waitress and female comedian who worked here to see what their reaction was going to be. And he wasn't accused of anything like Harvey Weinstein. So
you didn't ask me.
You weren't here at the time.
I know, my bad. I'm just
no, so I was very mindful of...
What would you have said?
You know what? I was talking to SD 2 weeks ago about this. And she was like, honestly, at this point, the job of the club is to let comics be comics. And if the audience sees him and decides, I can't, I won't, you refund the money, you don't ask any questions, you send them home, and that's it. Yeah. And I think that's okay. He should be allowed to work, and that's it. And if anyone is not happy with it, they can either stay or leave. But it's different than someone who's full-blown raped America like Weinstein has and Cosby has. Well, I don't want to work with Louis, but I'm like, if I come here, see the paperwork with the lineup, and see his name, I can go home. I'm free to go home, so it's up to me now.
Well, I do think that's sort of like.
And by the way, you don't have to hold your tongue. You can say anything you want about us or the club or me.
I get the but I think that's what it comes down to me is like we're talking about a workplace. You know, we're not talking about due process or public space. We're talking about for comedians, this is a workplace, and I think. Thinking about it the way you would think about another workplace, if I work at an IHOP or if I work at an office and there's somebody who my employer has a certain amount of information about what they decide to do with that information, and we know because of how the whole Me Too movement has revealed that this is a problem in every single industry, and actually at a lot of IHOPs or whatever in the world, people are not firing the person who has a reputation, you know,
it's right, and like, they're not free to go.
They're
home.
Not,
now they
you know,
can't leave or complain.
And you're stuck working with this person who's making you uncomfortable. You're stuck with the creepy manager, or you know, and and this is a situation that people are dealing with in every single industry, and comedy is no different. The difference is there's no HR department. There's nobody to like to sort of file a complaint with, and like. And it's not formal. It's sort of, it's this conversation like, are you okay with him being here? And then you being like, is everybody else okay with it? Like, it's like, it's a scary question. Like, you know, like, it's not a question I'm prepared to answer. Like, I feel lucky that I got Harvey in the room and not somebody that
and
would
not
make
Bill
me.
Clinton.
Well, like, there's a lot of people that would make me equally as uncomfortable that I would feel terrified to say anything about. And I think, and like, if it were somebody else, and I'm not going to say, like, a name.
R. Kelly?
If it were a comedian.
Ah, okay.
If it were a comedian that I believe is a rapist, but I'm not saying that. If there's a comedian, and then I feel equally as terrified. I feel equally as uncomfortable. I feel equally as triggered and unprepared to be funny. And then let's say the producer of that show says, Kelly, are you okay with this?
Real quick before your set starts. Yeah.
And I would just be like, like, I would probably just swallow. You know,
sometimes
like,
you really don't know until it's time.
I wanted to look. So,
no, they're saying that maybe those wages just didn't answer you.
I understand why you would think that, but no.
See,
that,
some
that,
might be lying to you.
Well,
also.
I'm only speaking for myself. No, like, I believe that they were honest with you. I'm just thinking in that situation. I don't know how I would answer, and no matter how I felt.
So we had whole podcasts with the waitresses on, and. Judy Gold hosted the podcast with them, and we of course it could be somebody who held their tongue, but at some point if you hold your tongue, it's on you. We did everything that I think we could responsibly do to see how people felt about it. You know, beyond that, what can we do? But the thing about due process is that yes, it's something that's required of the state, but there is a lot of wisdom that we all live by in our day-to-day lives. So, like, if somebody puts some rumor up on a rumor board, you know, we've heard that women post these rumors, whatever, and then nobody wanted to hire that person based on what they read on the rumor board, even though that's not the state doing anything, we would all say, no, that's not right. You can't just take away. So there is a wisdom in due process, which is that it's better to err on the side, what is it? They say let 100 guilty men go free, then an innocent man get convicted. And I mean, I know when I've said this before. When I think that I caught somebody stealing behind the bar, And if they give me an excuse, even if I really don't believe them, but if I think it's possible that they didn't do it, I will generally give them another chance because I don't feel the obligation of due process.
You want proof?
But if
I feel that I have to treat them as if
they do it again, and you're still not.
Then they're
100,
out.
But even if they do it again, you're still not 100% sure.
Yeah, I'm running a business and I have the decision is forced in my lap. But if I see somebody in a restaurant, I don't have to make the decision of whether I want to call them out. I mean, it's not like I can just say, you know what, I don't know what the fuck he did. I think he's guilty. I'm going to go eat somewhere else, or I'm going to finish my dinner. You know, I don't need.
Well, I think that the standard of proof can vary. I mean, you know, in the civil law, it's preponderance of the evidence. So if somebody posts something on a message board accusing somebody, that's a very low amount of proof.
Yeah. Well, we'll
if
see.
If it were more proof,
maybe you would make another decision.
Let's see what direction this goes in.
But with Louis C.K., if you're asking about Louis C.K. because that's what the Comedy Cellar has dealt with.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you were.
I wasn't asking about him, but you're talking about.
Well, I mean, you were asking in your previous question
about
the waitresses. When asking about that and relating that to due process, and in the case where Louis C.K. comes out with a statement apologizing, you know, and in apologizing, admitting guilt, and apologizing to the women that he hurt, whose careers were affected, what do you make of what that apology suggests about what did happen, you know, because before there were cover-ups or there was silencing of these women, and now he's saying, I apologize, you know what, I did affect my coworkers. And then how do you address that going forward when it sort of takes away from the due process element of the conversation, in that this person is saying, yeah, I did that and I'm sorry.
Noam, would you like to field that question?
Well, Louis apologized, as you say, for whether you thought the apology was adequate or not. The other stuff that you're saying about careers being affected and all that stuff, we have no. I mean, I'm not saying it's not true, but there's no. He, you know.
Well, I'm only speaking to what his apology said.
The apology didn't say anything about people's careers being affected.
It wasn't really an apology. Most of the female comedians who read it were like, "Well, this is not an apology."
But I feel like it acknowledged. Not that it.
He said it's true what they did, and I realize now that when you put a woman in a situation, it's not a question; it's a predicament. And I feel sorry for all the pain I've hurt caused, and I'm going to take time now to listen instead of talk. That's basically
what he said. So if we take that same conversation, I when I think about that, and I think about another work environment, let's say I work at like a law firm or, you know, like a corporate environment where we have an HR department, we have all these different checks and balances, and, you know, I find out my boss expose themselves in the office place, like in the break room at Walmart or at the, you know what I mean? Like, I find out this happened.
Yeah.
But then they said, apologize. And then someone says, well, you can come back to work now. He said, sorry. Like, would that be normal in another office place? Like, that's kind of the way I start,
you know,
trying to think of it. Like, if I compare it to another office place, is it normal?
I think that it's normal that to expect that. I mean, I don't want to rehash all the stuff we talk about this so much, but I will just, you know, because you're interested in it. So, like, at the time I was saying, like, if my bartender behind there right now, if he told me, you know, 15 years ago, I pulled out my dick in a hotel room in front of someone I masturbated without consent. He told me that. Would anybody expect me to say, get your shit and get out of here, you don't work here
anymore?
But
what if it was to one of the other bartenders?
No, but Louis didn't. No, none of this stuff happened here. No, no, you're right. If it happened in my workplace or to people who work, that would be a different question. I never had to deal with that issue.
Right.
Whatever Louis was accused of had nothing to do with this place or anybody in it.
Right.
It was an accusation of some things he did 15 years ago in another time and place. And I would add to that that I think we do have it upside down in a sense that the people who deny, even implausibly so, like Bill Clinton, we all kind of just pretend the denial is plausible. And the people who actually come clean, like Louis and some other people, we say, aha, and then we just jump on them, you know? And I kind of think that somebody apologizing comes clean and hasn't committed a crime, They do have a right. We ought to want them to be able to go on with their lives.
Well, I guess I'm thinking about when I hear about a comedian harassing another comedian, I hear about a comedian assaulting or raping another comedian, I hear coworkers, you know. So I'm thinking of it in terms of coworker sexual harassment. And how do you move forward from that?
I think about a non-office, but it's the office.
Yeah, for comedians, that is the only office.
That's the only office.
You know, the
we
green
have.
Room is the office. The hotel at the festival is the office.
No. The hotel at the festival is not the office. I'm sorry.
You don't think so?
Well, anywhere where comedians are congregating and all paid to do the same job as the office.
I was a musician, working musician, did tons of gigs. If I was hanging out with a girl in the band till 4 in the morning and the bars closed, and I said, hey, you want to come back to my room and smoke some weed, that doesn't give me any kind of license to misbehave in the room. No. But I would not say that she and I were at work in the office. Right. That was a decision of her to come back to my hotel room. I don't even know if the point matters that much, but just because it's the way I am, contrary in a certain way, I can't come that far and say this, like, if you're here at the Comedy Cellar or upstairs in the podcast studio or in the bathroom or that's the office, it's a captive audience.
That's not the same thing if I say, hey,
after this podcast, Kelly, let's you and me go get a drink and then go up. I have a room in Times Square. That wouldn't be the office. At some point,
what if I'm headlining a gig out of state and I ask another comedian who's a regular here to open for me, and he crosses the line in Delaware? It's still gonna. Well, it's not.
Yeah, that could be. I'm not.
We're considered for the most part Comedy Cellar comics. And it was still kind of, you're right. You are right, but then I'm also like, but it's still the office. I think the comedy community,
everywhere.
The comedy community, regardless of what club you're associated with, is the office.
Well, you're out late. I mean, I'm just thinking, even like last night, I was out with three male comics that I'm friends with.
Big mistake.
Until like, I just went to a show and we're out until like 3 a.m. just talking and laughing. It was great. We were just friends. We're hanging out.
Yeah.
Those guys are not rapists. Awesome. Like,
no.
Lucky me.
Yeah. That's
but
true.
I was alone with them.
The
you know
office
what I mean?
Is comedy. It's not a club. The like, office is comedy.
You're in a situation a lot, especially if you're a woman doing comedy, you're a lot of times totally outnumbered. You're looking around the room. It's 10
only girl.
It's 10 guys and you, and you're like, okay, let's hope no one's a rapist. You know,
yeah,
like,
that
I'm
is
outnumbered.
True. That's true.
I'm
that
outnumbered.
Happens a lot. I've hung out with comics and been like, I hope I can go back to my hotel room and nobody oversteps their boundaries.
And sometimes I'll try to just name it. I'll just like make a joke about it. Like,
Perry, what do you say about this? You're a comedian. You feel you have those same feelings that they do?
I think that when you are a woman navigating your way through the world, it's always something that's in the back of your mind. And sometimes it's not so much in the back of your mind. Like that, sometimes it's in the front of your mind.
Are you nervous often when you're around male comedians?
I don't know that it's if I'm nervous when I'm around male comedians. It's that I am wholly aware of the fact that as women, at any moment, a situation could become physically dangerous.
Yeah, I am a woman first. That's what I always keep in the forefront of
like,
my mind.
Like, you can't get away from that.
You can't
like,
move from
I,
that.
I would remind
and
Jackie
also,
that
wait, can I just finish my answer? I also think
you
that
may,
I
may.
I also feel like because I haven't been doing comedy for that long, if I got booked on like a big show that I really wanted to do and I saw a guy on there that made me uncomfortable for whatever reason, I don't think it would be that easy to just be like, oh, well, I'm just not going to do that show. It's right. Like, you want to do those shows.
You want to work.
Yeah.
And I have heard of male comics who will not fuck a female comic because they're so worried it'll be misconstrued or they're just worried overall, the word getting out. I'll flirt with a guy, comic, and he'll be like, nope, it's too weird now. I need to make sure that you're really okay with it. So, yeah, things are on the one end extreme. But, you know, they got there because things got so fucked up for a minute that now we're all on the extreme.
I wanted to say that Jackie, despite her protestations, is discussing what it's like to be a woman in comedy.
Yes. Because if I do a podcast or a radio show or someone's home office even with their phone, it's always going to come back to, so what's it like being a female in comedy?
We're talking about rapes.
That is.
Let's talk about rape, baby.
This whole topic was, what is it like to be a woman in comedy? That is every podcast. What's it like? Rape, whatever.
The truth is, what is it like to be a woman in comedy, I think, is a fascinating question. What's not fascinating is, you know, tell us about working at the Funny Bone or the Punchline. I mean, those questions aren't interesting.
No.
To me.
Because you're in and out. Because you're in for 3 days, 4 days, and then you leave.
But those are questions that are also asked a lot on comedy podcasts. I do think what it's like to be a woman in comedy is quite fascinating because you have these questions, these interactions with in a male-dominated world that you have to navigate, and I do think that's kind of fascinating.
I kind of like that men are more careful now.
Pardon?
I mean, the problem is that nobody ever says, what's it like to be a male?
No.
Is that the problem, really? That's the problem?
Yeah, I think it's like, why is the onus on us?
Because we're visiting your world. It's always, we are a visitor on your earth.
Well, I like to think of situations. I was around a group of men the other day, and they were all, like, plotting out their plan for, like, if they had to go to prison. Like, their plan to avoid getting raped, to avoid, like... And I'm like, and when I heard them all talking about like how to like not get raped in prison and
that's
like their fears,
lives.
I'm like, oh, that's me. That's what it's like to be a woman.
That's
in
what it's like. Now you get it. Now
I'm like,
you
that
get it.
Is it. Because I go into the room and I'm like, okay, who do I need to make yourself big, make yourself strong? You know, don't fuck around. But don't fuck that guy. Yeah. Don't do that. You know, it's like your plan.
I want to ask you a question. We say that's like that's quite, what it's quite. Like. That's what it's like to be a woman in comedy, or that's what it's like to be a woman?
To be a woman, really.
Both. I remember years ago, a very popular male headliner, years ago, and I'm like, can I go on a row with you? I need to get work. I want to open for you. And his first question was, are you fucking? And we were alone. But he was being sincere. He's like, well, I'll consider having you open for me, but are you going to fuck me while we're on the road?
That's certainly
And
a lot
I was
better.
Like, no. And of course, the offer, you know, went away. That's what it's like to be a woman in comedy also, before you become a headliner or before you become popular. They want to know, well, what are you willing to do to be a woman in comedy for real? And that's a constant thing.
And what's interesting
Esty
is
Esty doesn't do that, does she?
No. I'm entering this world with a very strange, like, most people are meeting me for the first time as, like, rape girl. Like, you know, that I can see them think that when they...
I look at you as powerful girl.
Thank you.
But
I go into a comedy club space for the first time, and I sit at the comics table of men, and I see them look at me, and it's, like, it's not, like, the same... I could tell the conversations are going to start differently because it's, like, the eggshells of, like...
They're careful. They're careful around you.
Can I say something, though? I think that that's really a good thing.
Me too.
I think that you broke some rule.
I like it.
That we're not supposed to say that, because as evidenced by the fact that nobody before you said anything is shocking to me. And the other really interesting question is, what if a guy comic had gone up on stage and called Weinstein out? I mean, I think the reaction would
And none of them did. I remember my little text group of female comics. We were, some of them were posting on Twitter. I guess no man stood up and said anything against him, did they?
No, not one. Not that night. I mean, if it's happened before, maybe at the previous Actors Hour, but you know, what it reminded me of is when Hannibal Buress mentioned Cosby.
Yeah.
And when he, like, that was what, it was like, that was what it took. Like, that's
And he didn't do it thinking this is going to happen. He just did it, you guys, you cool with this?
He unintentionally validated, like, 50-plus women and started this whole thing. And it's like, because he was a man, it was like, wait, what did he say? Like,
It went viral because a man did
even
it.
Even though he was literally saying, like, the joke was, if you Google Bill Cosby rape, it has more hits than Hannibal Buress. Mm-hmm. And so he knew it was already out there, and he's saying, like...
He didn't discover it.
You know,
yeah.
And the fact, like, that said everything to me, that it took, like, a man being like, this is true, and that's so true of the whole movement, where it's like, it's been out there. Women have been screaming this.
You
it's
know,
not
there's
new.
A video of Courtney Love about 20 years ago on the red carpet of some big Hollywood event, and the person interviewing her is like, so, Courtney Love, who's obviously, like, a huge star... What's your advice for young girls getting into Hollywood? And she said, don't go back to a hotel room with Harvey Weinstein.
Ooh, I remember that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and what's his name? Family Guy.
Seth MacFarlane.
He intentionally roasted Harvey Weinstein because he knew when he hosted the Oscars or whatever it was. And I remember remembering that. I think that's like when you're a rape victim, whenever you hear something like that, you log it. Like, I don't know how, I feel like a lot of times things get passed. Like, for example, when I heard about, when like a lot of this stuff hit the news, I remember feeling like I knew it like 5 years ago. Like, there's like a time when it comes up as a blip and it's like, it gets silenced, or, you know, you hear a little thing about Weinstein or Louis C.K., or you hear like, you know, these little like, and then you're like, what was that? And or someone says it in passing. And I think for most people, I think it sort of slips by. But if it's like at the forefront of your life experience, you're just like, you know, you remember it.
So let me ask you a question. Are you a comedian despite the fact that you had this rape experience, or because of it?
I've always been a comedian. I feel like it's been like a part of my identity since I was a little kid. Like, I was always trying to make people laugh. I was always, putting on skits and writing sketches since I was a little kid.
Like that.
I think rape got in my way for a while. I mean, there was like a 10-year period where, over the course of 10 years, I was raped on 3 different occasions. And every time I tried to do comedy, like, when I think of like the first like 3 times I tried to do an open mic, all I could think about was this. And it was like so fresh in my mind that I just tried jokes about it, and they bombed, obviously. I mean, not obviously, but they were rape jokes about me. And it was like, I remembered, and I just, it was like this therapeutic thing where I would try it and it would bomb, and I would go home and be like, I'm never going to do comedy. But it was like, it was in my head, you know? I felt like it was in my way because it was my life experience.
Did you get, in any of these 3 instances, did you get any justice from the courts, or did you pursue justice?
I never spoke out against my rapists, mainly because there are people
it's
who
one
were,
rapist 3 times?
There's 3 people, 3 different times. And they're all people that I know.
Jesus Christ.
I felt too much. I was so connected to them. It was either someone I loved or a friend, or there was a lot of guilt and shame associated with calling out someone that you know. And I've never felt strong enough to call them out. It's very difficult. I mean, you look at the people who call people out. Look at like Kavanaugh's like accuser. Like, you don't benefit from calling people out. Like, it can ruin your life.
You say you're a musician as well. Are you more of a comedian?
Sorry, with this fun comedy podcast, we're crying.
We're having a great time.
Are you? is comedy your main concentration, or music, or both?
Well, I've always wanted, my goal, like as a kid, I always wanted to like write for SNL or like write for like a show. And so
they probably have a spot open now still, right?
I heard.
Oh, yeah. They do.
Well, but I tried to I tried to get through to that through like making short films and making sketches first. Like, I was writing sketch and directing sketch, and then I started doing improv. Like, I've sort of tried different routes, and then I really latched on to stand up. And I have a band as well. But
is it country music or
it's punk?
Punk. Ah.
He's a country.
Yeah.
We have
with sexual predators.
Oh.
Tail end. We have to go. We have to go, everybody.
You don't want to say hi to Mateo.
We're leaving
everybody
on such a happy note.
This is going so great. Thank you for inviting me.
Sorry, I keep trying to figure out how to be funny in the rape interviews.
let the record show everybody's crying.
This is great.
It
is.
I'm trying to figure out how to be funny. Not very funny. Rape girl, not very funny.
It is Thanksgiving, or it will be Thanksgiving tomorrow as we record this show. So I'd
be
remiss if I didn't wish everybody, especially our new friend, Kelly Bachman, a happy Thanksgiving to all. Does anybody have anything interesting that they'll be doing for Thanksgiving?
I would like free drinks the rest of the night, please. Well, you guys are really brought me down.
That's up to you. What are you ready to do for it?
That's up to
what is your offer? I don't like it. I didn't say I'm against it.
Oh. All right. Well, Kelly, I'm really happy that you came, actually. And you were...
such a surprise. I love the actually.
No, because everybody
I'm
was...
I'm glad you guys asked me.
Because
I do.
I'm
like
glad
you're here.
You guys got to know me. Hey, I'm Jackie Fabulous, and I moved back to New York.
Hold on, Jackie.
I've been in L.A. for 20 years. Nobody gives a shit about me.
No. First of all, you're much too young to have been...
I didn't
I don't
mean
know how
it
old
that
you
way.
Are, but
I'm
you've 48, been in LA for
40 fantastic eight.
Well, I will tell you something, Jackie Fabulous.
You look fantastic.
You
thank you.
Do not look it. You're almost as young looking for your age as I am.
Oh, shucks. But no, it's not about. It's about all of us. I'm just making fun.
We didn't get to.
In any case, I meant that only because I was worried about if to have the conversation and not, you know, and being frank that. She might get upset or whatever it is, but it was a great conversation, and that's why I'm
We didn't get to some interesting points, unfortunately. Bloomberg running for president, didn't get to that.
you had topics? You had actual
We didn't get to Mike Pompeo said the settlements in the West Bank are legal under international law. Didn't get to
what?
That. We did a lot of political discussions here as well.
Oh, yeah.
And Noam's, but a favorite topic of Noam is Israel-Palestine.
Okay. Wow, I would have had so much to say on that.
And the latest
That's
on the impeachment,
difficult.
We didn't get to that either. But I don't think we're any the worse for it because...
Well, let's hope they don't settle the Israeli-Palestinian conflict before next week's podcast, so we'll get a chance to talk about it next
week. I don't know anything about
that. Yeah,
Did you know who you were inviting to be on this podcast? Can you see me?
What?
I don't know shit about Israel.
Kelly, by the way, I mean,
I have to do homework and read shit.
I'm half Jewish.
You're half Jewish?
Yeah.
By the way,
yeah,
Jackie.
My mom converted.
Jackie.
Converted from Jewish to Catholic.
Oh, that counts.
That counts.
I mean, you're Jewish.
Is your dad Jewish?
No, my dad's not.
Dad doesn't need to be Jewish. Her mom's
no,
Jewish.
No, I know. I was
Jackie,
just
by the way, Noam yes. is. She's working here now. That's relatively recent. But prior to working here at the New York Comedy Cellar, prior to that, she was a regular at the Vegas Comedy Cellar and a favorite of Estes. she was. And are you going back to the Vegas room, Jackie, anytime
I'm soon? There end of January.
Look for Jackie Fabulous in Las Vegas. Do you enjoy doing the Vegas room?
I love it. It's a little long. I feel like you have to have your mail forwarded to do the gig, but I love it there, though. It's a fun hang, and you get to work on new material because there's so many. It's 800 shows, I think.
We have
not
to wrap
quite
it
that
up,
many.
Gentlemen.
Ugh.
But
go to JackieFabulous.com.
JackieFabulous.com, and where can people go see Rape Jokes for Survivors? Rape Jokes by Survivors.
And for Survivors.
TBD. We'll be a tour, hopefully, very soon.
Nice.
Yeah.
And where can they follow you on Instagram? Or
I'm at Kelly Bachman on Instagram. I'm at Belly Cockman on Twitter.
Yeah, and I'm at the Roar Comedy Club this Friday and Saturday.
Whoa.
What?
I'm kidding.
My bad. Podcasts were about promoting ourselves.
It's okay.
I'll be in the cellar.
It's okay. We're going to
kind of...
No, it's okay.
Dan Natterman on Instagram and Nan Datterman. Kidding. Not,
Jesus
I'm
Christ,
stealing
Dan.
Kelly.
And
I'm
talk about stuff other than rape sometimes.
And you can...
So you should submit a tape here.
Oh, I'd love to.
You don't perform here?
No,
I think this is a passing. I didn't know it was a passing. Can we just pass along? Come on now.
You're a troublemaker, aren't you, Jackie Fabulous?
I almost had a nervous breakdown of this shit.
In.
Come on, let's pass
her,
for God's sake.
What?
Oh my God.
And you can follow us on Instagram at Live From The Table and email us.
Email us at podcast@copyseller.com. Good night, everybody.
I'm drunk right now. Bye, guys.